Hey, everybody. This is Maggie Rodden, and this is The Unsolicited Opinion. And they were really the days, weren't they? And what kind of days are we in now? That's a very good question, isn't it? I think there's a lot of frightening stuff on the horizon. In fact, it's not on the horizon. It is already here. There's so much information out there that people need to know. There's so much that they don't know. And it is so critical that we get information to people so that they understand what is swirling about them, so that they can make a decision to either stand up and fight back against what is happening in our nation and in our world, or else they can just roll over and be a slave, because there is no in-between here. I have another great guest lined up. I'm going to bring Michael Shaw on with me after the first break in a couple minutes, but I want to give you some information. Get involved with this network. Listen, the only ones who are telling you the truth are the alternative media sources. It is not happening on mainstream media or mainstream radio, and it will never happen on those. Get involved with us. Support us. RepublicBroadcasting.org is our website. Facebook, we are Republic Broadcasting Network. Twitter, we are RBN Live. Advertise your business or service. Get a bumper sticker. Get some business cards off of RBN. Hand them out. Let other people know that we are out there. Unless somebody lets you know, how are you going to know? You're not just going to automatically know this stuff. 800-724-2719 is the number to call into the network if you want to advertise your business or service. You can make a donation. Our address, 2251 Double Creek Road, number 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. We will be back in 3 minutes. Michael Shaw, founder of Freedom Advocates, is my guest. We will be back in three. Don't change that dial. Hey, everybody, this is Maggie Rodden, and this is the Unsolicited Opinion Radio Show. My website is three words, theunsolicitedopinion.com, and my guest website is freedomadvocates.org. It is like a library of information on UN Agenda 21. Please go there, start searching around, start learning. There's handouts on there that you can give out to people in your neighborhood, people you know, people you don't know. I don't care. Get this information out there. Michael, how you doing this morning? Thanks for joining me again. I appreciate it.
Well, Maggie, I am just fine. You know, it's a lot earlier here on the West Coast, but I guess that way every morning.
Yeah, right. I guess it is. So, you know, I was thinking about maybe is there something in particular you wanted to discuss from the get-go, Michael? Because we can do that. Otherwise, I wanted to kind of talk about food.
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about some executive orders that have been coming out here since I've been on the show last month, even, and just some of the action that's beginning to happen. You know, Agenda 21 is coming in on steroids. One of the things from the last month was the president has been issuing some executive orders. Some of these orders are quite scary. They get very little news attention, but. Here, I think, on the 16th of March, the president issued an executive order that allows the nationalization of pretty much the entire United States, even in peacetime, if he desires. Under this order, the federal government can restrict civilian travel by any mode, including foot travel. They can ration food. They can restrict water usage, even from private wells. And they can ration any and all drugs, including over-the-counter drugs and vitamins. They can collectivize farms, and they can take over all energy production, including home solar units. Now, what's the president doing this for?
What has
he got up his sleeve? Well, what all presidents have had up their sleeves since 1917 is something called the Emergency War Powers Act, which was passed by Congress back then and gave President Wilson the absolute power, that of basically a dictator, to execute what has been referenced as emergency war powers. And that really turns the president from a chief executive into a dictator. Now, that was in 1917. Now, the power the president got then were powers over suspected domestic enemies. In other words, he could suspend habeas corpus and all of the constitutional protections for those people that he suspected being a partner of the Axis powers, but you know the powers of German powers and other enemy powers back in that time frame. But that's all it dealt with was, you know, the emergency war powers the president had for anyone that he deemed an enemy of the United States. Now, the Emergency War Powers Act gave the president, and the president alone, the power to end the emergency war power. So that was 1917. 1933 came along, and the Emergency War Power Act was still in effect when Roosevelt took over as president. One of his first moves as president was to expand the Emergency War Powers Act in order to satisfy the American bankers, mostly foreign bankers. At that time, America was in effect bankrupt in 1933. And so what Roosevelt did, Congress passed a law expanding the Emergency War Powers Act to cover all citizens. And under this Emergency War Powers Act, Roosevelt gave all the power and all the property of all the Americans over to the international cabal, banking cabal, in order to satisfy our debts with them. So at that time, our whole title system of title for land changed, moving from an allodial system where you had absolute ownership rights into a color of title. Our title system changed. All the title companies changed. The nature of the deeds that you got upon the acquisition of property changed. And that's all because everything then becomes subjected to the powers under the Emergency War Power Act, and your properties, your lives, were in effect given over to secure this debt owing from the United States government. Now, that was in 1933, excuse me, and that power continued on until a president on his own waived off that power and ended the emergency war period. Well, everybody knows we fought a world war following that, beginning 8 years later and lasting until 1945. Well, that was 67 years ago. And since then, no president has ended the emergency war power. The president still has the dictatorial powers that he obtained in 1917, here 95 years ago. We are still living under a system that voids any concept of common law in this country and negates the principles of the Constitution. We've had at least 15 presidents since 1933, and not one of them has reneged their power. People ask, how can the president issue the kinds of executive orders that I read off to start this show, or that I described to start this show? Well, the answer is that he continues to have Emergency War Powers Act, and we live under an effective dictatorship. Now, that's the source of the centralization of power that brings Agenda 21 into our country, piece by piece, step by step, more and more thoroughly every day. America stands in weak shoes today. We have a president today who loves these dictatorial powers. And I predict come next year we'll have a president, whether it be Obama or Romney, who loves those powers. Romney is a full commitment to Agenda 21 Sustainable Development. Just Google his name plus Sustainable Development and you'll have a day's reading to do. We are on sandy soils that are shifting under our feet. Every month we see more and more actions being taken by our president, by our Congress, in the implementation of Agenda 21 Sustainable Development. Now, I'll disagree a little bit with something you said here to open the show, and that is, what are we going to do nationally to salvage ourselves from this mess?
Well, we need to do it locally. I understand that, Michael. Okay. I truly do. I do. I get that. I really do. I get that. Believe me, I do. It's just trying to get anybody to do much of anything, even though there's more people doing stuff, is a very tough nut to crack.
Well, it's a tough nut to crack, but people are catching on, and we'll talk about some of those circumstances where they are catching on here as the show goes along. You know, the really good point is that as we fall deeper and deeper into this hole, the surroundings are waking a lot of people up, and there have been good local actions to begin to oust the Agenda 21 policy. There is nowhere that doesn't have a long ways to go yet, but at least the battle back has begun, and that's a good thing. And, you know, my plan this morning was to talk a little bit about some major constitutional breaches, which have been ongoing from Congress's perspective as well, because it is these circumstances where the law that we all study to some degree when we're in school, less and less as time goes along. I mean, what I mean by that is the children today don't get very much.
I don't even think they can spell the word law, Michael, let alone know what it's supposed to be, unfortunately.
Yeah. You know, American children today are taught that the American experience just simply doesn't work. And, of course, it's being made not to work, but very few are really given the information necessary to understand that America was a great experiment in governance. It was the first and it is the only country in the history of the world to recognize that every human being is born with certain natural rights, or the unalienable right to one's life, one's liberty, and to the use and enjoyment of one's property. You know, those are principles upon which great things have happened and great things could continue to happen. But when we live in a nation that's subjected perennially to emergency war powers, turning the president into a dictator and abandoning all notions of solid constitutional law, then, you know, 100 years later, you look at the country and it looks like America does today, where the middle class is crumbling, where the rule of law is so expansive and so inconsistent that nobody can know what they can and can't do anymore. Where land use has been totally throttled in this country. If you're a rancher, you're either out of business or you're on the verge of it because you can't graze your cattle anymore. You know, you have increasing problems from environmental regulators and environmental NGOs that make your life a real hassle. And, of course, that filters down to people in the cities because the price of everything starts to go up because the production of food is more and more limited.
Oh, well, there's no inflation, though, they tell us, Michael. Hang on, or it's very limited. Hang on, we got to hit a three-minute break. Michael Shaw, founder of Freedom Advocates, is my guest. FreedomAdvocates.org is his website. Please go there. It's a library. Go there. We'll be right back in three. Hey, everybody. We're back. This is Maggie Rodden. This is the Unsolicited Opinion Radio Show. My guest this morning is Michael Shaw. Freedom Advocates is his group. FreedomAdvocates.org is his website. And I will link to Michael's, well, it's already up on mine. If you go to my main page under the recommended links on the right-hand side of the main page, you will find Freedom Advocates is already up there. But I will put it up there under where the podcast tab is for today's show as well. So anyway, Michael, please go ahead.
Well, let me discuss another executive order the president put out here since I was on your show last month.
He's called a busy beaver.
He has been, but, you know, this is why men like Barack Obama want to become president. Because
exactly, right?
You know, these are power hounds that are drawn to an institution that has lost its glamour as an American institution. It is now a globalist totalitarian one. The order that he put out in the middle of this month, I think it was I'm not sure what day it was, is SC Squared, meaning Sustainable Communities Squared, was announced by Obama, which will select, train, and place early to mid-career professionals to serve multi-year terms in cities to create partnerships among local community organizations, anchor institutions, businesses, foundations, and other government agencies with the goal of leveraging federal investments to increase economic impact. So what that means is the federal government's going to come out, pick its buddies in your community, they're going to get all the money, and they're going to squeeze out the businesses that aren't part of the inner core. And they're going to start doing the things that Barack Obama from D.C. wants to see happen in your community. Now, Adolf Hitler didn't have such a well-designed scheme as that. But the federal influence on local policies has become overwhelming. We'll talk, I'm sure, we have in the past about the federal regional organizations that already direct your county and city governments. These are so-called COGs, meaning councils of governments, and MPOs, meaning metropolitan planning organizations, which take in broad areas of landscape. You know, the one just above where I live, the one for the San Francisco Bay Area, covers nine counties, 7.5 million people. And the COG that operates up there is called ABAG. ABAG has a plan for the remake of the entire San Francisco Bay Area along smart growth, sustainable standards. And the federal government has put up $250 billion for the remake of the San Francisco Bay Area. This means stacking and packing houses along major corridors like the El Camino Real and eliminating all private transportation options for the El Camino, which runs from San Jose to San Francisco, because it's all going to be public transportation. And the federal government has committed over the next 20 years $250 billion to this plan. And you think there's any chance for the dollar to survive?
Yeah.
With that kind of commitment coming in under these smart growth or sustainable community programs coming from the federal government, well, I guarantee you the dollar's not going to survive this. That's part of the plan, and it's part of the takedown of the United States of America. Now, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that Congress has been doing for a long while. I mean, we focused a bit on the executive department. We've seen how they have simply wrongful powers and controls given to them by Congress nearly 100 years ago. And since that time, over 100 years of presidents, not one president has given that power back and taken that power away from his successors. So it's no wonder, whether you elect a Democrat or a Republican, all we see is a continued acceleration of power in Washington, D.C., and a continued deterioration of the financial dynamic that supports the U.S. dollar. But let's take a look at what I call three constitutional breaches that have been undertaken by Congress over a long period of time. The first of those three is federal ownership and or management of broad landscapes. Now, implementation of the Wildlands Network, for listeners who don't know what the Wildlands Network is, let me explain it quickly. The Wildlands Network is a program whereby over 50% of the American land mass is to be put into a reserve category, the Wildlands Network for the United States. The Wildlands Network is ultimately, this is the program of Agenda 21, the program of action for the 21st century to create a world government. The program here in the U.S. includes this Wildlands Network, which takes over half of our land and puts it off limits to people and to resource extraction. This is why we can't get our oil, because increasingly our lands are off limits. This is why miners can't mine. It's why timber owners can't cut their timber. They go up to Montana, fully half the trees are dead. They're standing, they're dead. They've been infested with a pine beetle. But the rules are so tough, you can't even cut a dead tree down in Montana.
Yeah, yeah. Hang on, Michael. I hear the cue music. We're going to break. Michael Shaw is my guest. FreedomAdvocates.org is his website. We'll be back in 3 minutes. Don't change that dial. Hey, everybody. We're back. My name is Maggie Rodden. This is the Unsolicited Opinion Radio Show. And my guest this morning is Michael Shaw. Freedom Advocates is his organization. Freedomadvocates.org is his website. Tons of information there about everything related to UN Agenda 21. So please go there. Take a look. I'm telling you, you really need to. Anyway, Michael, please go ahead. You left off with you were talking about the Wildlands Network, and so please
right.
go ahead.
Okay. Well, you know, I'll contend, and I don't think I'll get much argument, that implementation of the Wildlands Network is a violation of Article 1, which deals with the legislative branch, Section 8, which deals with the legislative powers of the U.S. Constitution. Now, why do I say that? Well, the constitutional authority for land ownership is set up in Article 1, Section 8. And in that provision, it says that Congress shall have the power to exercise exclusive jurisdiction in the district, meaning the District of Columbia. And it says that that area is not to exceed 10 miles square. And it says that it shall exercise like authority over all places purchased by the consent of the legislature of the state for purpose of erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. Well, think about that. Take your state, wherever it happens to be. I mean, I'm in California, and nearly 50% of this state is owned by the federal government. Now, we do have a few forts, you know, a few army bases around the state. So I'll give way. The federal government has the constitutional power to own these forts, these bases. But California, but the federal government owns the Sierra Nevadas. The federal yeah. government owns much of our coastline. The federal government owns nearly 50% of the land mass in California. Under what constitutional provision? There is none. So why is it that they have all this ownership? Not just in California, in Nevada, it's over 90% of the land is owned by the federal government with no constitutional authority, in fact, with a constitutional prohibition against being able to do that. So why is it the federal government has all this land? Well, in short, you know, it's a long-term plan. In short, the feds want to consolidate ownership so that they can join the world power and take these lands, put them off limits, give them over to the animals, put the people in smart growth cities where we're stacked and packed and where the food production will not meet the needs and demands of the people. Say, well, gee, that doesn't bode well for us. And I say, well, Agenda 21 calls for an 85% reduction in the human population. How better to do it than to take our land and take our resources and put it off limits to us? And here it is, the federal government for a century has been working to do just that. And now we're on the verge. Now's the time for states to stand up and say, hey, federal government, you're out of here.
I agree.
Michael. Two states are doing that. The state of Utah and the state of Arizona both have legislation calling for a return to the state for authority over all federal land in those states. This is really big. This says that the sleeping dog is waking. Let your state join in to that kind of movement. Let the federal government know that Americans are simply not falling for their planned demise of the American experience as we incorporate ourselves into a world government that has no regard for the significance of the individual.
None at all. We're just numbers.
I don't even know if they've given us a number.
You know what I mean? We're just nothing.
Yeah.
Useless eaters.
Well, you know, the Agenda 21 protocol says that all species are of equal value. Except, of course, like in Animal Farm, you know, some are more equal than others. okay, which is why if you're a long-toed salamander in Santa Cruz, California, your rights exceed the landowner's rights. You simply can't use your land because it's suspected that there could be a long-toed salamander. You see, the whole constitutional framework is destroyed from the top to the bottom of our society today, and it's no wonder why the youth are uninformed. They've been in the government education program that is designed to make them uninformed. And it's why adults are increasingly frustrated, because what's yours is not yours. Everything now is part of the collective. And that's going to continue until or unless the American people wake up, really wake up, and understand what is and has been going on in this country for a very long time. And that's why I began the show with a discussion of the Emergency War Powers Act. I don't know, 15 presidents, 100 years later, and we still have this law that was designed to get us through World War I, and it's never been abated. And it's just been a constant influence of federal authority in every matter in which we address. And now we're down to our knees. And are we going to continue to beg for the crumbs? Or are we going to stand up and say, our communities are no longer part of the federal authority. Our communities are now run by ourselves. Our homes and our families are run by ourselves and not by an overexpansive government. We need to recapture the spirit of liberty. Good thing is, Maggie, it is beginning to grow. People are starting to wake up. People are beginning to do things. And, you know, that's the great thing of what's going on today. But there are some other federal breaches that I want to discuss in this morning's conversation.
Go right ahead, Michael. Please.
People
continue.
Can put it in context. And the second major federal assault undertaken by Congress is the delegation of trade policy to international institutions. You know, under the American system of government, our federal form of government is to be supported largely by import and export duties. And, there were prohibitions in the Constitution against the kind of direct taxation that the income tax is, and so we would move to excise taxes under the constitutional system, and that would include import duties. And for a long time, America's federal government was supported by that system of taxation. But then along comes the World Trade Organization, and America, acting under the War Powers Act, becomes a member of the World Trade Organization. And to do that, you've got to surrender basically your sovereignty, the national sovereignty, in order to comply with the world edicts coming out of the World Trade Organization. You can no longer tax imports the way the country did for its first 130 years. You know, now all import taxes have to be approved by this world organization, a world organization that is designed by multinational corporations so that duties aren't paid, so that corporate makers can go to the cheapest place in the country, get it made, bring it into the United States, have huge profits, and pay no duties. And consequently, the tax dynamic then falls on the backs of the ordinary citizens in what is a patently unconstitutional mode of taxation, at least based upon the original Constitution. And all of this is designed to begin to offset federal spending, which now has grown way above the capacity of the federal government to impose an income tax. And so we're dangling in the air. Our products are made offshore, massive profits, untaxed, go to multinational corporations, which are in partnership with world government. It was Prince Charles who set up the International Council for Sustainable Development with all the multinational corporations as members. His lead corporation was BP Petroleum.
Well, you know, Michael, I was watching C-SPAN, and I can only tolerate watching this stuff, listening to their lies for about 5 minutes a day now. I can't take it anymore. But they were talking about how the United States has the highest corporate tax rate in the world, and I'm thinking to myself, they don't even pay taxes, most of these corporations. They might have the highest rate, but nobody's paying it, so what the hell difference does it make? It's just nonsense.
Well, you know, if you've got a corporation that is dependent upon American workers and dependent upon American products and dependent upon American customers, you do pay a high tax rate.
Oh, yeah, but most of these guys are escaping paying these high tax rates. They're not paying it at all.
Geez,
the littler guy, the little corporation is getting whacked, but not a lot of these multinationals.
No, GE, which has been off and on the largest corporation in the world, hasn't paid a U.S. tax in a long time.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. GE, the American company that brought us good things to life.
Yeah, there you go.
is now all over the world and producing jobs for all over the world. And in the United States, it doesn't pay a tax. So what we have is a world that has been taken over by centralized powercrats and by multinational corporations. And which party deals with these issues? The answer is, none of the above.
Yeah.
The best person to vote for in this election, by the way. None of the above. So, since Congress has delegated its authority over U.S. trade policy to the World Trade Organization and the various multinational trade pact organizations, our national sovereignty has been abrogated. And so the effects of surrendering trade policy control are huge, because in this process, American industries are lost to the globalization process. That's why we have stubbornly high unemployment. And that's because we don't make things anymore. It costs too much to make it in America. I mean, there's 300 million people here, as though that's not enough people to create an economic unit. Certainly it is. We have to go and get our goods from slave labor in China because it benefits the multinational corporations while leaving Americans unemployed or underemployed. The only salvation for the American economic malaise is to withdraw from the World Trade Organization such that free trade begins to happen in the United States under an American system of production and taxation. But as long as we're stuck in the globalist system, we will find that America's dominance is eliminated. And when I say dominance, I don't mean military dominance. I mean the dominance of American ingenuity to create better alternatives for the marketplace than foreign initiative, and that dominance is gone today. Instead, our goods come from foreign countries, our workers aren't producing, many don't even have a job, and that problem is going to continue until we recapture production into this country, and that won't happen until we withdraw from the World Trade Organization. That needs to happen.
Yeah, Michael, I have had on my show a professor, retired professor from the Aerospace Engineering Department at the University of Michigan, and he talks, when he comes on with me, talks often about how many students in that department, in the school in general, are coming from, like, communist China, and these seats and this information and the technology is just walking right out the door, being deliberately sent out the door to communist nations, and there are not seats in these universities, in these different departments for American kids. They're bringing in all these foreign students from these communist nations.
Well, that's right. But that's all part of the multinational corporate control in partnership with world government agencies. It's designed to redistribute America's wealth, and that's why these people from these places are taking spots in our a higher educational system, and it is designed to neuter American sovereignty. And we're seeing the evidence of that, and I think we're going to see a lot more of it over the coming decade.
You know, oh, yeah.
If America can stand for as long as another decade. So, you know, so the question becomes, what do we do? And these are big issues, and it conflicts with the idea that this battle really has to be fought locally. And it does need to be fought locally. But we need to understand that as the battle advances, and as we recapture our towns and recapture some state houses, you know, when we get to the federal government, we can finally take on the federal government, we must, again, make American trade policy American-made. We cannot surrender our trade-making power and remain a sovereign nation, and that's why we're on the road we're on today. You know, the involvement in the World Trade Organization is designed to destroy the nation.
I just want to throw out there for everybody listening, Michael, that I have a link on the website to Joan Vian, a lady who unfortunately passed away a year or so ago, but I have a link to her website, and she's done copious research and has information there about all these different trade agreements, World Trade Organization, the Bank of International Settlements, the International Monetary Fund, and their role in the takedown of this nation, really. So for everybody listening, Joan Vian is under the recommended tabs, or recommended links. Great website, tons of information. Go ahead, Michael, please. I know you were going to mention a third point of the three constitutional breaches. Please go ahead.
Okay, well, the third point is the delegation of a monetary authority to a private consortium. What do I mean by that? Well, our monetary system, you know, the funny money that's made out of thin air and lent to all of us, is a system that is a private system. The Constitution requires that that the monetary unit be measured in gold or silver. It's pretty clear about that. You know, the founders knew that fiat money, that is money made out of thin air, never survived.
Hang on, Mike, hold that thought. We got to hit another break. 3 minutes, we'll be back. Michael Shaw is my guest this morning. FreedomAdvocates.org is his website. We'll be right back.
Are you ready?
Hey, everybody, this is Maggie Rod, and this is the Unsolicited Opinion, and my guest is Michael Shaw, and when we went to break, Michael, you were just making a point about fiat money, so please go ahead.
Well, this is another longstanding abrogation of Congress's constitutional responsibilities, because nowhere do they have the authority for delegating monetary responsibility to a globalist system of central banks. And when they do that, the result is we have a loss of a constitutional and honest monetary system. So this is another breach of Article 1, Section 8. And this time it is about creating a central banking dynamic in the United States, led by the Federal Reserve, all set within a world system of central banking. Now, this is the indispensable ingredient for creating world government. But Congress has no authority to delegate an exclusive monetary system to a third party. And, you know, that is exactly what happens when the Federal Reserve is formed. And so this accounts for at least the financial aspect of the dilemma we face. You see, the Federal Reserve can just simply create money out of thin air, and their pattern is to create it and loan it out. So there's never enough money in the system to actually have all the interest paid on all of the debt that has been created. But they don't care because a system of fiat money is designed from the start to implode. Because upon the implosion of a fiat money system, the power to the money creators is accelerated because now everybody's desperate. And at that point, assuming they have control over the political forces, you know, and if you have a central bank sitting around long enough, I guarantee you they end up with control over the political forces. So that's where we sit today. We sit today with a fiat money system that is imploding. The consequences will be the destruction of the American life, the average American, and an acceleration and concentration of the control that has been already grabbed off by those at the center of this funny money system. So the existence of central banks, like the Federal Reserve, is what allows for the printing of money necessary to fund the globalist movement, while accounting for the creation of that money as debt owing from us. So America needs a constitutional monetary system. Today we must understand this issue if we are to avoid becoming trapped in an arranged future that frankly has little regard for human life. So, just looking at these three constitutional breaches, federal ownership of land, the world trade policies that we're now succumbed to, and the creation of this fiat monetary system. Those three breaches of the Constitution, undertaken by Congress, now for over many decades, puts us on the verge of total subjugation. And we see evidence of that total subjugation coming out in the executive orders issued by Barack Obama. Now people say, oh, it's all Obama's fault. And I say, no, it's not. Obama is just a string in the line of presidents, every one of them becoming worse and worse than his predecessor. The next president will be worse than Barack Obama, assuming we have another president. The point is that America is on the boat to oblivion, and nothing's going to change that unless you do something.
Hang on, Michael. We got a quick 60-second station identifying break. Hang on, everybody. We'll be back in 60 short seconds. Hey, everybody. This is Maggie Rodden. This is the Unsolicited Opinion. Listen, you got to get involved with this network. The only way we're going to get the truth out there is if people help us. Because this is not being talked about and discussed as candidly as it is here on this show right here today with my guest, Michael Shaw. That's just the reality. The candor occurs because of alternative media sources, not the mainstream media. They're keeping everybody in the dark about what's really going on. Oh, they'll throw a word out here or there, but they're not giving you the truth. Alternative media is what gives you the truth. Help us out. Advertise your business or service on this network. 800-724-2719 is the number to do that. Republicbroadcasting.org is our website. Buy some bumper stickers. Buy some products. Support our advertisers. Buy some business cards. Hand them out to people. Let people know that we are out there. I always mention Officer Jack McClam's newest book or version of his Vampire Killer 2012, which needs to get into the hands of all of our military and all of our law enforcement officers so that they understand what is going on here. Because let's face it, the reality is the ones who are going to be coming and knocking at your door isn't going to be the mailman. It's not going to be, your local baker. The people who are going to be knocking at your door and busting into your home and taking you away in the middle of the night will be the police or the military. They need to understand what's going on. Buy that book and let them know that you heard about it on RBN. They are sending a portion of the proceeds back to RBN. 2251 Double Creek Road, number 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664 is our website. Facebook, we are Republic Broadcasting Network. And Twitter, we are on RBN Live. Get involved, stand up, speak out. Don't be a slave, because they're going to kill off 85% of us. And I don't think people, when they really get that, listen, you might think you're going to be one of the lucky ones who's in the 15%. Well, I wouldn't take that bet myself. Michael, I want to let you know that I just got an email from a woman who is listening all the way from South Africa, because you and I know, and this lady down there knows, this stuff is going on all over the world. All over the world. And she says there is no dialogue on those topics down in South Africa. None.
My in-laws are all South Africans. My wife is a South African. South Africa, like most of the world, is in a you know, sort of a dark abyss. So what is happening there for, with regards to sustainable development? It is being implemented, but there's absolutely no force in most of these countries that, you know, bring that fact to the public light. And that's certainly the case in South Africa. It is really the case in most of Europe. I mean, there are some Brits who understand this dynamic. You know, if we want to look at the centerpiece of the world order and ascribe a national influence, I would say it is British. And it's another a factor that Joan Vion convinced me of, that the monarchies, you know, I don't think they have a place in the stacking order that is superior to the globalist bankers, but certainly the monarchs of Europe, and in particular the British monarchy, is fully committed to this international order, really an expansion of the you know, the British the conglomeration of British control during the 19th century and early 20th century over so many nations. But you know, if we add up these violations by federal government, we find out that you know, that we're really on shaky ground, and you know, the people's goal must be to rein in the federal government, to get rid of these non-elected councils that Barack Obama will use to transform your community into a new fascist state.
Yeah, yeah. Hang on, Michael, before we get into those little Soviet structures, we will be back in 3 minutes. We've got to go to break. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be right back in three. Don't change that dial. Michael Shaw is my guest this morning. FreedomAdvocates.org is his website. Hey, everybody. We're back. This is The Unsolicited Opinion. My guest is Michael Shaw. Michael, you were starting off talking about all these unelected little boards, little bureaucrats that will be operating and are operating. So please go right ahead.
Well, you know, the condition of the federal government gives way to the opportunity. You know, globalism doesn't come into effect by simply a global decree. Globalism comes into effect when globalism infests your local community. So we can observe, we need to understand what it is the federal government is doing and has been doing that puts us in this box. But the real battle is locally. Because let's face it, you know, Maggie, if you and I and every listener stormed Washington, D.C. tomorrow objecting to what we've been talking about tonight, absolutely nothing would happen.
No, big waste of time.
If there were 10 million of us who marched on Washington, D.C., absolutely nothing will happen. Because as long as Democrats and Republicans are elected to Congress, the parties themselves control those elected people, and those elected people go along with the globalist program. There is no way this Congress or the next Congress is going to clean up the problems that Congress has been making for a long, long time. So what do we do? Well, the only thing we can do, and exactly the right thing to do, is to do what people have always done when their liberties get trampled, and that is stand up for liberty in your town. The Revolutionary War began in Concord, when people did exactly that. Now, I'm not proposing that we, you know, announce the British or the globalists are coming and to get your gun, because that's not going to be a solution. The globalist military power is beyond anything we can fight. And, you know, they've been true to Nikita Khrushchev's promise that they would bury us without firing a shot. He said that twice, once in Southern California and once at the UN while slamming his shoe on the table. But that's precisely what has happened. The Iron Curtain came down, the communists escaped onto our side of that border, and today, you know, with Gorbachev sitting in San Francisco, the communist movement is alive, only it's no longer communism. Today, it's a system predicated upon fascist economics, public-private partnership, we call it so politely in America today, and a Soviet system of justice where it depends on your standing in the community and what it is that the community wants to see happen. These are what determines the justice that is dispensed in American courts today. It's not the process of equal justice, which is called for in the Declaration of Independence, where all people are treated the same and where all people are acknowledged as being vested with certain unalienable rights. Instead, our entire system of law has shifted from equal justice to social justice. You go to law school today, you learn social justice. You don't even read the Constitution. You take a years-long constitutional law class, but you never read the Constitution. That's standard law school education today. And so what comes out of our law schools are people committed to the principles of social justice, which hold that justice is to be doled to groups in accordance with the objectives of the political process at that particular time. And that's where we are stuck today. So how do we get out of this? Well, we start in our local community. And we start with two things. One is our land use program, which is completely dominated by sustainable development policies. And that domination comes, again, from the federal government in the form of regional organizations. Most listeners are not familiar with councils of government. These are so-called COGs that operate and basically control every square inch of land in America today. A COG is a federalized regional governance apparatus, that is the definition of a Soviet, regionalized government apparatus. These COGs come loaded with money and tons of regulation and massive power into your community and tell your elected officials what they have to do. You can't expand your boundaries, your city boundaries, without getting COG permission. You can't undertake development planning without your COGS permission. And today, the COGS are coming in with massive amounts of money to revamp our communities in accordance with sustainable development, smart growth principles. And this is happening everywhere. The lead spot is actually the San Francisco Bay Area, where the One Bay Area plan, supported with this promise of $250 billion.
An incredible sum
to remake the Bay Area in accordance with this New World Order design, where people are to be taken out of their cars and put into stack and pack housing. So we need to become aware of these COGs, what they are, what their power is, how they came about. You know, here in California, they came into California under Ronald Reagan, who said, the era of horse and buggy government, meaning local control, is over. We're bringing in the COGS into the state of California to give us a brighter future, says Reagan.
Yeah, well, you got to be, what is it they say, beware of Greeks bearing gifts for whatever reason. I don't know the origin of that little ditty. We got to beware of feds bearing gifts, huh, Michael?
Well, you know, the thing is that the feds don't really advertise they're bearing gifts. They're really quiet. It's amazing the number of people who still think that government works as they learned in their eighth grade civics class, and that is that there are three levels of government, federal, state, and local. Well, what our civics book in the old days didn't tell us was that there was a fourth layer brought in originally under Eisenhower. I mean, you can see this is not a purely Democrat movement. This fourth level of government was the establishment of COGS and MPOs, the regional outfits that take control over which cities can do nothing without meeting the dictates of the COGS. And so this silent branch of government has overwhelmed over the last 40 or 50 years the American system of government, and we're not going to recapture a free society until we blast the cogs out of our community. And you can find out who your cog is and what areas it covers simply enough with a little research on the net. But when you've done that, you need to cause more people to understand their power. You know, every city can voluntarily join or not join the cog. Get your city out of the cog. You say, well, then we lose money. And I say, well, if you lose enough money, we're going to have local communities who, en masse, simply stop paying their federal taxes. Because if you're paying federal taxes, they're supposed to come back to you in the form of cogs, and you begin to realize the cogs are a Sovietizing arrangement, and you don't want to be Sovietized, and so you don't want their damn money, you ain't going to give it to them in the first place.
Yep. Yep. We need to have a tax revolt, Michael.
Well,
we have taxation without representation. It's a perfect example of it.
Well, it's taxation for fascist, Sovietized influence and control coming from a central government source. You know, we've let things go simply too long, Maggie, and now we're down to the 11th hour, and we've got to make some desperate moves. But that desperation can be managed and effectively mounted if we sit down, we pause, and we really understand what's happened to America, what's happening to America, and where America is intended to be when this process is completed.
You know, Michael, why do you think that some people seem to think creating another structure like this with these little property rights councils, which you and I discussed the last time you came on with me, why do you think they are so naive to believe that somehow creating the same thing would be the solution? I just don't understand why that is not evident, that this is not the solution. A property rights council of unelected people, even though they may be their picks the first time or so, I don't understand why they don't get that. Why isn't that clear? I mean, it just boggles my mind.
Well, I think some people begin to get a sense that things are off. And so they want to do something, but they're not thinking through the process of what's off, why it's off, and how do we get rid of this increasing Sovietization.
Well, they should be listening to some of your old podcasts up on your website, Michael, and it would become very, very clear. All they need to do is listen to a couple of the broadcasts where you were discussing this. I used to get on the treadmill and listen to you, all the shows that you did up there. I need to do it again.
It's hard for me to understand how or why some of the leaders of the freedom movement lopped on to this idea that we solve our problems by adding to the Soviet brew a property right council into our city government.
Yeah, right. We'll be back in three. Michael Shaw is my guest. FreedomAdvocates.org is his website. Don't change that dial. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody. This is Maggie Ron. This is the Unsolicited Opinion Radio Show. My website is three words, theunsolicitedopinion.com, theunsolicitedopinion.com. Go there. I will link to, I've already linked to Michael Shaw's website, my guest this morning, freedomadvocates.org. We started to get into the craziness of people thinking that creating the same little Soviet will be the solution. Michael, so if you want to expand on that, go right ahead.
Well, I have an article it's on the front page of Freedom Advocates called Property Right Councils Adding a Stakeholder to the Soviet Brew. You know, and that I think will give people a good short summary of what these stakeholder councils do, why that is the problem we have. We've got too many of them in our local government as it is. We shouldn't have any. We have elected officials to handle the officialdom, And these elected officials need to know two things. They need to know the limits on their authority, and they need to know the constitutional framework in which they operate. You know, and these property right councils came out of one of the proponents of it was a fella in North Carolina who was a commissioner of a county there, and he said that, gee, we need this special interest because he says we can't rely on the elected commissioners being prepared or equipped with constitutional knowledge. Now, can you imagine that?
Yeah, I can.
Electing the wrong people.
Well, I gave out state constitutions. I'm in Pennsylvania, Michael. I gave out about 100. I had about 100 constitutions. I gave them out to the little kids coming to the door for a piece of candy on trick-or-treat. They got candy, and they got a little truth while they were in it. So, I don't know. Hopefully somebody, if we just keep trying these different things we're trying to get information out there, hopefully somebody will open the book and read what's inside. You know what I mean, Michael?
You know,
I'm telling you.
It's hardly a book. It's a pretty short document.
Right, exactly.
But it is certainly ignored. I mean, you don't read it in school. You don't read it in law school, as we talked. And, most Americans have never read it. And then you ask, why is this country going down? Why is it that public officials say you need a stakeholder council for property rights, because the elected officials don't know what the Constitution says? I mean, what a sad shape of events. The elected official raises his hand and swears allegiance to the provisions of the Constitution, and then it's acknowledged that they need help because they don't know what the Constitution says. Well, the first thing the Constitution says is that you as an elected official have very limited powers. They're enumerated and they don't go beyond that, and so stop exercising wrongful authority. That's the message for elected officials. And we need to have the way we start to clean up this problem is beginning at the school board. I mean, we haven't talked about schools at all in this session, but that's the second of the three legs of sustainable development, and that is to educate children to become global citizens. And I can tell you that everything in the educational system in America today does that as its first objective, and that is why our students are doing so poorly. Because, you know, if you're a young, eager mind, and you're going to school, and you're getting this globalist claptrap thrown at you, you know, the really smart, intuitive, young human beings just tune out. You know, I look at students today and I say, I want to see those perfect C students. The ones who want to learn to add, but the ones who reject all the indoctrination that surrounds the exercises that they go through in their math classes. You know, in California, every course is to be vested with an environmental message. That's state law. That means you take math and you've got to be learning the environment in your math tricks. It is simply time to pull your children out of government schools, because that's what they are. They're government schools. And today the government system is about world governance. And that's how our children are being trained. The second leg of sustainable development, education for global citizenship. You know, we talked about Reagan earlier. You know, he brought the COGS to California, and he didn't start the Department of Education. He ran to get rid of Carter's Department of Education. He got into office, and by the time he left, the U.S. Department of Education was the largest institution in the world.
Well, I want to throw in, now that we're talking about education, Michael, Charlotte Thompson Iserby's book, which I've got a link to her website, too. People need to read. She worked for Reagan in his first term. Her book, The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, and her website, I think off the top of my head, it's deliberatedumbingdown.com, where you can get her book. Actually, she's revised it, updated it, but the original version is in PDF format for free. on her website. It's about 1,000 pages if you print it out, because I printed it out and read it about a year ago, but it is excellent. So for anybody listening, go there. It details everything related to what they have done with our educational system. Listen, Mike, hang on. I hear that music. We're going to break. This is the Unsolicited Opinion. We'll be right back in 3 minutes. Don't change that dial. Hey, everybody, we're back. This is the Unsolicited Opinion. Michael Shaw is my guest. So we're venturing down the path to our educational system, I take it, in this conversation, Michael, huh?
A little bit. Time is flying. And I want to talk a little bit about the Rio Plus 20 conference that comes up this June back in Rio. For people who don't know the history of Agenda 21, it was formally launched in 1992 at the Earth Summit held in Rio de Janeiro. It was a UN confab. 178 nations signed on to the Agenda 21 protocol. George Bush Sr. was then president. He went to Rio and met with Prince Charles on his yacht, in the harbor there, and put the U.S. Agreement to the implementation of the terms of Agenda 21, via his signature. So, the way the process got started, there's a lot of talk bantering around in the news today that Agenda 21 is not a treaty and there's nothing required, and et cetera, et cetera. And while theoretically that argument can be made, we've had four presidents since that time, and each of the four, two Democrats, two Republicans, has fully implemented Agenda 21. So it is true that the UN, in creating these world directives, no longer has to solely rely on treaties that have to be ratified by the United States Senate. Agenda 21 would not have been ratified by the U.S. Senate, but the political parties stand behind Agenda 21 anyway. So this so-called soft law agreement, meaning no treaty ratification necessary, it doesn't have legal authority, it's not binding on the U.S., but it comes into the U.S., into all federal agencies, and then filters down to local governments. And in the process, the recommendations made by Agenda 21 protocol get implemented as law in local, state, and federal legislative acts. So don't let people fool you that Agenda 21 is not hard law treaty. That's factually true, but in the context of the way it works, it's of no consequence. It simply means that the U.S. Senate never had to ratify the terms of Agenda 21. It gets implemented administratively, and the laws get set at the local level. So what's happening now is that a Rio Plus 20 conference is being set for this June in Rio de Janeiro. 10 years ago, there was the decades conference was held in Johannesburg, South Africa. And this is a conference, huge conference, where all the NGOs gather and all the active players in the implementation of Agenda 21 so they can lay out their updated scheme for the next 10 years. So this June, back in Rio, is Rio Plus 20. And the highlight of this conference will be the implementation of the Draft Environmental Covenant on Environment and Development. And what this treaty does is it demands that all laws and regulations integrate international law for all forms of physical planning. This is in Article 41 of that document. So what it means is that all town and county planning, all infrastructure, including highways, railways, waterways, dams, harbors, etc., the aquifers, the drainage basins, the coastal and marine areas, and any other areas constituting biological units. I mean, what spot on the earth doesn't have biological units?
Not any I can think of, Michael.
Right. And so what this covenant covers is an allocation of municipal agricultural, grazing, forestry, and other uses. This is a total globalist control of everything that happens locally. And of course, when you do that, now that the federal government largely has control of the rural landscape of America, Obama has his rural council dynamic, which is kind of putting some final nails in the rural fields. But now the focus is going to be on cities and communities and getting them to design their communities on a basis that's fully intact with the globalist demand that people live in so-called smart growth, stack 'em and pack 'em communities. And this covenant, assuming that it gets adopted and signed off to by the United States, will put more pressure than we're seeing today through the COGs and MPOs on local governments. So they are stepping up their game. They are going for the finish line. You know, it was George Bernard Shaw back about 100 years ago who said he was an early Fabian socialist. And he said, "We will crawl for as long as it takes." The turtle symbol of Fabianism. We'll take as long as we have to get ourselves into place. But when we see the finish line, we will race like hares to get to the other side. And I contend that today is that time when the globalists are racing to the other side. They are led by Fabian socialists. And today we're seeing it come into place. And the Rio Plus 20 conference to be held in Rio de Janeiro this summer, this June, will be the catalyst for taking the sustainable policy and putting it on steroids wherever it is you happen to be.
Which is every place on earth. Every place on earth. You know, it is just so, it's so, every time I hear it, it just never ceases to amaze me. Their plot and their plan and how successful they have been thus far at getting this, pulling the wool over people's eyes. It's just, their treachery. They've been so treacherous, but it's astounding to me how successful they've been at it, Michael. It's just amazing.
Well, but we can see a foreshadow or a foremensioning of this going back to the late 18th century. Because it was then that the founder of the Bank of England, you know, it was the modern fiat monetary system began in the second half of the 18th century with the Bank of England. And some German fellows came over and got the charter for the first fiat bank in the modern era. That was with the Bank of England. And, you know, at the time, the operator of the Bank of England said, let me make the money. Let me make the money out of thin air. And I care not who makes the laws.
Yeah, Mayor Amschel Rothschild.
Well,
yep.
They don't care. And the point there is that if you have the power to make money out of thin air and loan it out to governments and businesses, you're going to own whoever makes the laws.
Yep.
And so that's why the system is so perverted. Not only are you going to own the lawmakers, you're going to own the media.
Yeah.
You're making the money. It goes to the people, lent or however, into the hands of the people that you want to control the industries you want controlled. And media is certainly one of them. And that's why, you know, you don't hear this kind of discussion on Clear Channel. It always comes down form and the nature of the monetary system. And that's the biggest problem America faces today. That's not going to be the first problem we solve. The first problem we solve has to be kicking sustainability policy out of your neighborhood. There is no community in America that has done that thoroughly. I know ICLEI has been kicked out of dozens and dozens of communities over the last year. That's a good first step, but it is but a first step because the COGs are still bringing the ICLEI policies into the towns. It had kicked ICLEI out. In other words, the COGS are run by ICLEI policy with direct influence coming from ICLEI. So even if your city kicks ICLEI out and cancels its contract with ICLEI, ICLEI is the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives, the UN NGO, that is designed to bring Agenda 21 into your community. You kick that contract out of your community, and it still comes right back into you via the local COG.
Yeah. Michael, we've got a caller. Wayne is on the line with us from Texas. Let's grab him, Mike, before we run out of time this morning. Wayne, go right ahead, please.
Yeah, hi, Maggie. I think you have a wonderful guest on this morning, and I've been on his site. And, Mr. Shaw, you've done a great job of explaining, you know, what's been going on with Agenda 21.
Well, thank you. We got a big citizen crew here in Santa Cruz, California, and contributions from people all over the country and the world. So
sure.
I won't take the credit for all that's there, Freedom
Well, it's been a great site, and we're using it for some local stuff we're doing. And here's my main question. RBN has some tremendous legal researchers on the staff, William Taylor Ryle, Ron McDonald, and they're great researchers on administrative procedure and how sometimes these code enforcers and all of them will make life miserable for a lot of people. And I'm wondering if your group has really looked into various strategies that can be put out there on a, so we can use it on a local level, like to turn back like an overzealous code enforcer or a city or county officials trying to dictate land use. And the reason I bring that up is they've developed an administrative process through letters and notices to kind of get us into a dispute and then try to default us, which turns into a fine. And through listening to Mr. Ryle and even Ron McDonald, you know, we as individuals have the ability to do our own administrative process on these code enforcers, where we can send them a letter saying, where's your constitutional authority? You know, where's your delegated authority? You know, things like that to turn the tables on them. And we give them a 30-day you know, notice period to respond. And if they don't, we can do a default on them. So this is what we've tried here locally, and we're still in the process of finding out if it's going to work. But on the strategy side, is this something your group is pursuing? Because if you could put a model out there that people could use coast to coast, we could slow down the stuff on a local level.
No, but what I think is that I would like to have further communication with you as you develop what it is you're doing. You know, I think Santa Cruz, again, is one of the models for just this kind of assault on ordinary citizens, and has been a model for doing that for 40 years now. And we have not looked at the issue as you're describing it. We would certainly like to, and we would like to get that message out to all the other communities that are suffering from this code enforcement assault.
Sure. Brought on well, by and Maggie, you know, from Mr. Ryle, he's talked about personal nullification. I think that's what I'm trying to describe to Mr. Shaw. So there's ever any opportunity for, I think William is even better versed on it than I ever would be, but if Mr. Shaw got hooked up with him or was on the show together, perhaps it would be a good strategy session to take this to a level where we as individuals can slow things down until we can kind of group together and fight it on a, you know, community level.
Sure. Michael, you know, William Taylor Ryle is my buddy here in Philadelphia. He's actually been to that thing that was in Valley Forge a year or so ago. The conference that was held, he was actually there. I don't know if you've ever met him, but I can connect the two of you, but maybe we can work something out so he and you are on the show together, and maybe I can even pull Ronald McDonald in, who's been very successful going after oaths that people have been not taking that they should have taken, or the whole creation, for example, that the building department would be creating zoning offices that they have no legal right to be creating these and then empowering them in the first place. And Ronald McDonald, Mike, is actually up in Northern California. I don't think he's too far from you, actually, but off the top of my head, I can't remember where he said he lives. But so maybe we can hook something like that up. Wayne, I want to thank you for calling.
Sure.
Unless you have anything else you want to throw in, go ahead.
Yeah, Ron's website, if I recall from memory, is newpeopleorder.com. Mr. Shaw looked at that. Ron delves into the financial aspect of this, to where this phony money system we have is the root of the situation we're involved in. So it delves in, then it kind of delves into property rights and how it all plays out. So it could be a very, I think, educational situation for him.
And that website again?
Newpeopleorder.com.
I'll shoot the information to you, Mike. I'll send it over to you.
That would be great.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Wayne.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Wayne. Yeah, different, any tactics we can come up with to put the brakes on to this would be a wonderful thing.
It basically comes down to understanding how Agenda 21 comes into your community and then making noise in your community about that, bringing that information to people's attention, getting people to run for school board, getting people to run for water board. These are where the policies are really implemented, the school boards and the water board. And certainly, you know, get yourself to the city council and to the county commissioners or supervisor board, because that's how this stuff is going to stop. And clearly today, the kind of person who gets elected to local office is the person that's playing right into the sustainable claptrap, because it can sound all so warm and fuzzy. We're going to take care of the little bugs and the little creatures roaming around the countryside. That is simply false.
Well, you know, Michael, talking about the water boards, I was talking to a group several months ago about UN Agenda 21, and one of the fellows after the meeting said to me that in the town he lived in, one of the guys from the water board was talking about, well, once we get control of their water, then they'll have to do whatever we want them to do. I mean, this is a little rinky-dink town outside of Philadelphia, but you got a little Hitler sitting there on the water board recognizing the control he'd have over the people's lives in his community. It's like, hello?
Well, I'll tell you what's happening in our community. The plans for smart water, everybody knows about, you know, smart meters covering your electrical usage. But there are plans here to bring in a smart water dynamic. So what this means is that you would get water meters that measure the precise timing and use of your water. In other words, if you're in the shower, the water purveyor will know you're in the shower. The idea is when the water purveyor knows you're in the shower, he can limit your shower to 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And the plan that the central planners here in Santa Cruz are salivating over and have been for nearly a decade now is the technology that exists that allows them to do that. So whether you're talking smart meters or smart water, it's all designed to further the consequences of the shortages that are being created in both water and electricity.
Yep, yep. Hang on, Michael. We got to go to break. We'll be back in 3 minutes for the final segment. Don't change that dial. Michael Shaw is my guest. FreedomAdvocates.org is his website. We'll be right back. Michael Shaw is my guest. We have another caller from Philadelphia, Mark. Go ahead, please, but you got 30 seconds to ask your question because we're running out of time.
I just want to acknowledge, Michael, I'm originally from Missouri, and I've spoken with Michael. And, Michael, to let you know that back in Missouri, many of the people got on the committees. They signed up to be committee persons. And what I found out is that many, many seats – Many county seats are empty, and that's what's going on in Missouri. And if it's empty and they sign up to run for that seat, and nobody runs against them, they automatically get the seat. So that I don't know if that's occurring not only in Missouri but other places as well. But I really want to also acknowledge Wayne for coming up with the idea, this idea of having a model that we can all work with here, there, and everywhere. I think that's a great idea, and that's really what we really need to do. So thank you very much thank Maggie for having him on, because Michael is tremendously informed. He's a patriot to the max. So thank you again.
Oh, you're welcome, and thanks for calling, Mark. I'm thinking he must have been referring to maybe the committee positions that are open, say, for example, in the Republican Party or the Democratic Party. That's my guess.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Michael, any thoughts on that? Mark, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Well, you know, I'm not sure the parties are worth salvaging, frankly.
Well, I can tell you right here, they're cheating anyway, Michael. Here, instead of having a vote for the people who had put gotten signatures to become a delegate, the Republican Party in one of the counties here outside of Philadelphia, they just appointed themselves and their cronies to these delegate positions. So, I mean, they're just cooking the books because the game is rigged, Democrat or Republican.
Well, that's right. And for people who do sympathize with the Republican Party, you need to become aware of the IDU.org. That's the International Democrat Union. The IDU.org is a so-called conservative political action group consisting of 80 political parties from around the world. It's led by the GOP, and it calls for the universal adoption of the UN's Universal Declaration of Human Rights. That means the end of America. That's what the Republican Party is up to, and don't think for a minute that there's any better circumstance than the Democrat Party. Most people are kind of suspect of the Democrat Party as it begins. But the Republican Party is just as committed to this globalist order as our leaders in the Democrat Party. So for the ordinary person, it is to drop out of both of these parties, get yourselves involved in local government, school boards, water boards, city councils, etc., and begin, you know, begin by understanding the nature of our Constitution. Know what the American experiment is, restore it, get yourself in a place where you can make a difference.
Yeah. Well, Michael, we're running out of time again, but I am going to hook you up with Bill Ryle and Ronald McDonald, and maybe the three of you can come on the air together and, I don't know, share ideas, I guess. Thanks again, Michael, for all you do. Thanks for joining me today. I always appreciate it very much. Thanks for your time, Michael.
Well, I'm glad to be here, Maggie.
Take care. Hey, everybody, Michael Shaw, freedomadvocates.org is his website. Listen, you know, I love to go to Oz. I will link to Michael's on mine, theunsolicitedopinion.com. As I always do, it's already up there, but go there, get involved, stand up. The sun's going to come up tomorrow. Hey, chin up, everybody. We've got people like Michael Shaw in the world who are fighting for you and I, so do not lose heart. Another great show follows mine. I'll be back tomorrow. Take care, everybody.
By a boat or a train. It's far, far away. Behind the moon. Beyond the rain.